Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to Hapae Kaiwa Podcast with Jun Senesak, episode 273. Hey, what's going on, everyone? Jun here with Hapae Kaiwa. Today's guest is Tomohiro Seo. Tomo is originally from Hiroshima and moved to the United States over 20 years ago. In the US, he was working for a Japanese company for almost 10 years when he decided to quit his job to pursue his dreams. Tomo's dream was a simple one. He wanted to do something to help people from all over the world, not just the Japanese community. Tomo thought the best way to do that was to serve Japanese food to the world because he believed that food had the power to break down the language and cultural barriers. However, he was faced with harsh reality. He didn't have money to start a restaurant, nor did he have any experience as a chef to make authentic Japanese food. So what did he do? He bought a truck, got into the food trucking business, and served Japanese-style curry. Today's interview is an inspiring story of Tomo that teaches you the power of hard work, dedication, and believing in yourself. 今日のゲストは Tomohiro Seo さんです。Tomo さんはもともと広島出身で20年以上前にアメリカへ引っ越してきました。Tomo さんは約10年間アメリカにある日系企業で働いていましたが、自分の夢を追うため会社を辞めました。Tomo さんの夢は日系社会だけでなく世界中の人々に貢献できる何かがしたいというシンプルなものでした。食べ物には文化や言語の壁を越える力があると信じていた Tomo さんは日本食を世界中の人々に提供したいと考えました。しかしレストランを始めるためのお金はなく、またシェフとして本格的な日本食を作った経験もないという厳しい現実に直面しました。そこで彼は一体どうしたのでしょうか。彼はトラックを買ってフードトラックビジネスに飛び込み、和風カレーを提供しました。今日のインタビューは、自分を信じて一生懸命頑張って働くことについて、トモさんが語ってくれる刺激的な対談です。I hope you guys enjoy this conversation with Tomohiro Seo.
Hey Seo, what's going on? How you doing today?
Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on the show.
No
problem. I'm excited to talk to you today. And,
yeah, me too.
You know, we'll talk about this a little bit more later on, but we actually just shot a YouTube video of your food truck.
Yeah,
right?
Thank you for coming.
That was a lot of fun. I actually never seen the inside of a food truck.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, I've bought things from food trucks before, but I've never seen what it's like in the inside.
Right.
So it was actually a very cool experience to be able to go inside your truck, see what it's like, the whole operation side
of it. All the people come into the inside, they say, oh, this is bigger than outside looking. What's coming to the inside is much bigger than... Right?
Yeah, exactly. Because from the outside, it doesn't look like it's very big.
Yeah.
But once you get inside...
Yeah, how come there are three or a couple of people walking inside in small in a space?
Yeah. So anyways, I'll let you guys know more. But we actually shot a YouTube video. It's on Hapae Kaiwa's YouTube channel. So after this podcast, after you listen to this podcast... Go and check out the YouTube channel and see what it's like, what his food truck is like. So anyway, you know, this is not the YouTube channel. We're on the podcast today.
Okay.
And I want to hear a little bit more about you, your business, and what your life has been like here in the United States. So,
Making me nervous.
Yeah. Don't be nervous. So, Seo-san, can you briefly just tell me about yourself?
My name is Tomo. Everyone call me Tomo. I was born in Tokyo, and when I was 7 years old, moving to the Hiroshima. That's the place I raised up. I came here in the United States when I was 24 years old.
Mm-hmm.
then started learning English. Then now, wow, it's past 20 years so far.
Yeah, so it's been over 20 years since. That's awesome, yeah. That's a long time. Yeah, yeah. So you're from Hiroshima.
Yes.
Yeah.
My parents live in Hiroshima.
Very nice. Yeah, I've been to Hiroshima a couple times, and I have to ask you this question. Yeah. Are you a Cubs fan?
That's the most question people. But when I ask somebody ask me that, yes.
Yes.
But my father is a Giants fan.
Oh, he's a Giants fan.
And my brother is a Cubs fan. Uh-huh. So I was being watching when I was a little kid. My father and brother is conflict each other when the Giants is Cubs doing a game. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm pretty much, you know, not really the side. You know?
Okay.
Yeah, so, I'm very flat.
I see. So you're kind of, you have like a neutral stance.
Neutral stance.
Whether it's the Giants or the Cubs. So if you're in Hiroshima, you're a Cubs fan.
Yes,
if you go to Tokyo, you're a Giants fan.
Yeah. Wear my clothes.
Very cool, yeah, because every time I go to Hiroshima, I notice that people in Hiroshima are die-hard Cubs fans. Yeah, the entire city is red. Yeah, as soon as you get out the station, it's just a sea of red, and it's amazing every time I go there.
So no matter what, when you go to the Hiroshima Cubs Stadium, you have to pretend to be the Cubs fan.
You have to.
Otherwise, you're going to be in trouble.
Not a Giants fan.
No. Whatever you wear, that cap, the red stuff.
Yeah. I bought a hat, by the way. Hiroshima Cubs. Yeah. It says Kapu in katakana.
Kapu in katakana.
So when I wear it, people know that I'm a gaikokujin. Because I think Japanese people don't wear Kapu that says in katakana. Yeah.
The sale in Japan?
In Japan. Yeah, I found it in Japan. It was actually discounted. It was 50% off. And I think the reason it was 50% off is because nobody wants it. Yeah. But I wanted it. So
yeah, it's
totally
interesting.
Yeah. Okay, so we're not here to talk about the Hiroshima Cubs. We're here to talk about you today.
Yeah.
Can you just tell the listeners what you do, what your day-to-day tasks are like?
Since I'm running the food truck business, it's maybe called in Japan is the lunch car, whatever. It's now lately if people start calling it food truck, but you know, maybe the listener, everyone knows the food truck is a mobile, the kitchen car business. It's been 9 years, 10 years around that, and so the way I do the business every day. In the morning, I'm going to the shopping first and grocery store and buying stuff and moving to the commissary. The commissary is the one a food truck has to park.
Okay.
It's officially permitted by the health department. Mm-hmm. We have to park the food truck there because the health department rule it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And bringing the stuff into the truck. Then meet my workers, then move into the spot to work. I have most likely have a spot, two different spots. It is Santa Monica and LA downtown.
Mm.
So most basically Monday, Wednesday, Friday go to downtown LA, and Tuesday and Thursday go to the Santa Monica. And the lunch hour was at 11:30 to around 2 o'clock. Then back to after close the door, my truck, and driving in a crazy traffic down to the commissary again.
Yeah.
Then after that, the washing, the cleaning up the inside of the truck.
Uh-huh.
Then mostly get down for for my work.
Ah, I see. So how long does the preparation in the morning usually take?
I will say like in an hour.
1 hour.
In 1 hour.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, most likely the main stuff we're selling is a curry, right?
Right.
And the curry is already pre-made.
Mm-hmm.
So all I need to do is bring it to the location and warming up.
Mm-hmm.
And while warming up, my worker is cutting the vegetable or grill the teriyaki chicken. Yeah, that's pretty much, doesn't take long time to open it.
Right, right. And by the way, how many coworkers, or I mean not coworkers, but how many workers do you have working for you?
It depends though. Basically, lunch is only one.
What?
So I'm the cashier, and he's the kitchen.
Got you.
Only two people work inside. too many people cannot fit in the small truck. And it depends how big the event, the super, super big event, we're going to hire the extra workers.
Uh-huh.
But most likely, me and one more person is enough.
Right, right. And like you said, you know, with your food truck business, there are a lot of different types of people who sell different types of food.
Mm-hmm, that's true.
You decided to go with curry.
Okay.
But, you know, we'll talk about that later on why you decided to... use curry as your food trucking business. But before, you know, we talk about that, I want to talk about your past a little bit. Yeah, when, before you moved to the United States, so you said you've been here in the United States for over 20 years
20
now.
Years, yes.
Did you always want to live in the United States?
Oh, that's a good question.
Uh-huh.
Honestly,
yeah.
When I was... I would say like elementary school, never dreamed it.
Uh-huh.
Even my older brothers, the one time he graduated, how do you say it? After graduate the college, university, they go to the travel, right?
Yeah, I'll study abroad.
Study abroad, I think. Uh-huh. Then my older brother studied abroad to the Grand Canyon.
Uh-huh.
And I saw the picture when I was elementary school. And I said, oh, it's beautiful. But I'm thinking I've never have a chance to go there.
Right.
I even thought that I'd never have a chance to ride an airplane. That's my limited the image.
Right.
So I never imagined that like after 10 years, 15 years later, I started living in the United States. I never dreamed that when I was a little kid.
Wow. So when you were a kid, you thought that you were basically going to... stay in Hiroshima, maybe
west side of Japan, even not Tokyo, maybe.
Not even Tokyo.
Not even Osaka.
Yeah.
Maybe stay in the local, super local.
Yeah. So what happened? I mean, I guess when you were a kid, I mean, when you're a kid, you don't really know, but how did this mindset change to all of a sudden you becoming interested in living abroad?
I think the one of the reasons is my friends.
Mm-hmm.
when I work in the part-time job at the place, my friend, he's a little bit older than my age, but he loves to travel around. So always he show me the picture. He go to the United States or any the Asia or whatever, Europe. And that make me inspiring to, you know, even, he's my close friend, but he nothing different with me. Only age is different, right? He's
right.
Not like super rich person, but he can go to the abroad everywhere he wanted.
Uh-huh.
So maybe I have chance to go there.
Yeah. So I'm actually interested. Do you think the reason why you thought you couldn't go abroad was because of financial reasons? Do you think like you needed a lot of money in order for you to...
Maybe one of the reasons, yes.
One of the reasons why. And when you saw your friend who was basically the same as you, right? He wasn't like really rich.
Yeah.
But when you saw somebody like him being able to travel the world without having a lot of money, it made you realize that, maybe this is something I can do too.
Right.
Yeah.
Because before that, I thought going to abroad is we have to... book the airplane, book the hotel, join the tour.
Uh-huh.
That costs a lot.
Yeah.
But the way he does is only buy the ticket.
Mm-hmm.
And after get the spot, he go to wherever he wanted, wherever he want to stay, you know, no plan.
Mm-hmm.
Only get the ticket, right?
Right.
So that cost, you can save little.
Yeah. You're right. And that's what it's like to travel when you're young, right?
Mm.
You're traveling on a budget. You don't have that much money.
That's backpacking.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the way it is.
Uh-huh.
My second going to abroad. My first in Jamaica, right?
Jamaica. That was my first place.
My debut.
Hold on. Of all places, why did you choose Jamaica?
the first one, going to Jamaica with my the friend... when I was university, and he loves the reggae.
Okay.
Bob Marley,
right?
And he wanted to go to the Jamaica, but he's kind of afraid to going along.
Mm-hmm.
So he asked me, "What you want to go to together?" And I said, "I didn't even know what the Bob Marley though." But okay, let's go together.
Uh-huh.
And going to the Jamaica, like I think 5-6 days. That's my first trip. And that those days inspired me that maybe I could. The travel around is, I like it. Mm-hmm. So I could by myself. Then second journey is already by the big backpack and going to the Jamaica. And my goal is the, what's it called? The, we can see the place, the Northern Light. The,
what is it, Alaska?
Yeah, Alaska. And, it's called, the place is called Fairbanks.
Uh-huh.
But going to the Fairbanks to see the aurora. Is it Northern Light it's called?
Yeah, Northern Lights. Northern Lights, right.
Yes. That is my goal, to go to Alaska. And that's my myself and go to the hitchhiking.
Uh-huh.
Even though I don't speak English zero.
Uh-huh.
Then, yeah.
Hold on. So did you actually make that dream a reality? Did you actually hitchhike and go to Alaska and see the Northern Lights? Did you make that happen?
Yeah. That's, you know what? Back in like 25 years ago, something like that, in Japanese TV show, is called Denpa Shonen.
Denpa Shonen.
Denpa Shonen is the guy was hitchhiking all over the places.
Yeah.
And with backpacking, that makes a big boom in Japan, especially for the young kids.
Yeah.
And he can do, maybe I can do it.
Uh-huh.
So maybe I was too much pure and copied. Uh-huh. Maybe he can do it, I can do it, and by the backpacking and going to the Alaska.
So you did backpack and you hitchhiked to Alaska.
Yeah.
Really? Where did you start and where did you end up hitchhiking?
Okay, let's say from Japan, maybe going to the Korea first, and transit to the Anchorage, is the capital. I think they. From the Anchorage to Fairbanks, I think a couple hours. I still remember that the Korean guy picked me up.
Picked you up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he drove up to the Fairbanks. I think a couple hours. Yeah.
So was it pretty smooth? Were you able to catch rides or did you have difficulties getting to your destination?
No, not at all.
No, not at all. So people were very nice. Yeah, huh? They picked you up?
Yeah.
And I'm assuming you went to go see the Northern Lights. So this is during the winter time when it's really cold, right?
Actually, it was September, I guess.
Oh, September.
Yeah.
Okay.
But Fairbanks is a place when you see the Northern Lights, the over 250 days in a year. So if you want, you spend like a couple days up there, probably you can see it.
You can see it. Yeah. I see. Wow. So that is pretty crazy. So you had like this, you saw this guy on TV, you were inspired, you said, I'm going to do it, and you actually
made
it happen.
Writing the Anchorage in the note, holding by the street, and hitchhiking.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was crazy, right?
That is crazy. Maybe the things you do when you're young, right? Yeah.
Maybe I cannot do it now. Especially California is prohibited, right?
Maybe. Actually, you might be right because I don't see too many hitchhikers out here. You're correct. Yeah.
Maybe you cannot do it here.
Yeah. And it is a little dangerous out here. You do have to be careful while you're hitchhiking. But, you know, that story about yours, you know, you hitchhike. I think as a young guy and, you know, a young woman too, hitchhiking is something that you... I don't know. It feels very adventurous, right? Something that you want to try out when you're young. So when I was living in Japan, I think I was 24 or 25 years old. I actually hitchhiked in Japan too.
Oh, you are?
Yeah. From Kanazawa to Osaka.
Okay.
And then we also, once we arrived to Osaka, we spent a couple days in Osaka. And then from Osaka to Kanazawa, my friend and I hitchhiked back. But I feel like it's such a fun, memorable experience, right? Yeah. And the people that you meet along the way, they're typically really good people. Yeah.
That's true.
And what I noticed too is that people who pick you up are usually people who have hitchhiked in the past.
Oh, maybe that's true.
Yeah.
Maybe someday later, I have the chance to have pick up somebody.
Exactly, exactly. And because I thought Japanese people wouldn't pick us up. It was me and another Canadian friend. We're both really big.
Oh, okay.
I'm sure like picking us up must have been really scary, right? We have like two guys that are like 185 centimeters. One guy's like very gaikokujin looking, right? But every time I got in the car and started talking to these Japanese people, they had the same story as you.
Ah.
They were like, yeah, you know, as a matter of fact, when I was young,
yeah.
I used to hitchhike.
Right.
I hitchhiked in, Southeast Asia and a lot of different places. So it was their way
That's
to
true.
Give back to the younger people.
Once people get helped by somebody, then after that, they want to help somebody else, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that is pretty cool. So that was your beginning into your life abroad, huh? So with all these experiences and inspirations that you got from Japan, what basically brought you to the United States? How did you end up here in the United States?
In that time, when I was 24 years old, my goal is to study English.
Mm-hmm.
So I signed up the 8 months, the ESL?
ESL.
ESL. Mm-hmm. 4 months in the San Diego, another 4 months in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my goal. And to study English, I was thinking that the United States is the best place. So at that time, I was thinking after 8 months passed after ESL classes, I returned to Japan. Yeah. So that's my start.
Mm-hmm. So you gave yourself 8 months, here in the United States to study English.
That's it.
And your plan was to go back to Japan.
Yes.
Yeah. And how did that plan go?
Well, after 8 months, my English was not enough. Even now, not enough. But I thought maybe getting likes to living here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And also same time, the 8 months English career is not works enough to after work back to Japan.
Mm-hmm.
When I doing the job hunting,
mm-hmm.
and the interview, I say I study English 8 months in the United States. But people say, so what?
Right? So what?
There's a lot of people working and going abroad to a couple of years.
Yeah.
Having the MBA, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They have 8 months is nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought I have to do something more. Something extra. English plus something else.
Right.
That make me more, you know, getting job.
Right. So what did you decide to do after your 8 months? Did you go back to Japan or did you stay here?
8 months, I transferred to the college. It's Orange Coast College.
Uh-huh.
And starting the major, the film and video.
Human video?
Film.
Oh, film. Film. Got you.
Yeah, uh-huh. Film and video. That's my next step.
Uh-huh.
And I graduated after a year and a half. Then practical training?
Right.
Yeah. Practical training visa and worked at the local publishing company.
Mm-hmm.
That's my start, my career in United States.
Ah, very interesting. Yeah. So initially, your plan was to come here, study English, go back to Japan, and find a company that would be where you will be able to use your English and Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
But you soon realized that studying here for 8 months is not enough. Yeah. Which led you to going to a community college here, mm-hmm. learning filming and photography.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing led to another. You ended up working for a company here in Los Angeles.
Right.
Yeah. Wow. Very interesting. So when you lived here,
mm-hmm.
whether it was your first year or whether it was your first couple years living here,
mm-hmm.
what was some of the good things that you noticed about living here in the United States or in Los Angeles? And what were some of the bad things that you kind of picked up living over here compared to Japan, I guess?
The most reason why I keep staying here is nothing different when I studied in Japan, studying here. the first day and 20 years later now is no different. That's a blue sky.
Mm-hmm.
LA's blue sky.
Yeah.
Always. I love it. And the blue sky makes people, you know, relaxing and make people nice and happy.
Right.
Maybe that's the reason why I stay here. Mm. Not maybe not in New York, not in some other states, right. LA.
Mm-hmm. The weather is beautiful here, weather though. Beautiful. It is. Yes. It really is. And when you live here for a really long time, like for myself, I grew up in Los Angeles, you sometimes take the weather for granted, right? You forget how beautiful it is in Los Angeles because it's beautiful every single day. It like literally doesn't rain and you never see a cloud in the sky. And when it does rain, people talk about the rain, right? It's like, oh my God, it's raining today, right? That's how beautiful it is.
Oh, that's a good question. Because when I'm talking to the American friends, they say, when I starting in Japan back days, starting here back days, when raining, American people surprising.
Yeah.
Oh, this is raining coming in. So me, for me, Japanese, what is the special? You know, in Japan, like there are four seasons.
Exactly.
Right? Exactly. Rainy season, the snowing season, summertime, the fall, all season looks different. And rainy, nothing special.
Yeah.
The American guys, the rain is coming now. So
I know, right? They like panic, right? It's like, oh my God, it's gonna rain tomorrow. Yeah, right. Yeah. And in Los Angeles, you can tell that people are not used to the rain just by driving, right? When you're on the freeway on a rainy day, people are terrible at driving. It's so dangerous, right? They don't know how to drive in the rain, right? Yeah. So, yes, I totally agree with the weather. You know, it's something that I grew up with, but I always have to remind myself that we have it really good here in Los Angeles. Is there anything bad or anything that you notice here living?
Customer service.
Yeah.
Maybe probably the listening, this podcast.
Yeah.
Most likely they are living in Japan, right?
Yes, most of them do,
so still they don't know it. Uh-huh. But when when it comes to the United States, maybe they recognize how much
it is. How would you describe the customer service in the United States?
I sometimes feel like Japanese customer service too much kind.
Uh-huh.
That's what make me the feeling like the American one is pretty bad. But basically for the American people, it's a basic, maybe nothing special we feel in it.
Uh-huh. But I think I know what you're talking about in terms of in Japan being like maybe too polite
too
at
polite,
times, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's very systematic. They follow a certain way of customer service where it doesn't matter if you go to a konbini in Tokyo or a konbini in Hiroshima, the way they talk to you and the way they act are pretty much the same, right? They follow a certain set of rules, like a very manualized. In the United States, of course, you know, certain restaurants, high-end restaurants do have standards that they have to meet. But generally speaking, when you're talking about fast food or supermarkets, you know, the customer service will vary depending on
the person.
Right? Yeah. Sometimes it's super casual. Sometimes they're on their phone. Mm. Sometimes they're talking with their coworkers.
Right.
When you're standing, you're like, hello, you know, can you give me some service here, please? Yeah.
And no matter what, the million time I say hello, but people are doing the Facebook one inside there.
It's like, I'm a customer here, right? Yeah. But you've been living here for 20 years now, and also you're in the customer business too.
Yeah.
I actually want to ask you this maybe later on, but have you gotten used to the customer service here now in the United States? And I know that you also go back to Japan a couple of times a year. When you go back to Japan and get the customer service in Japan, how do you feel now? Do you think that it's too much? Or like every time you go back to Japan, you're like, ah, this is customer service.
Mm.
Like, what is your feeling now that you've been living here?
Yeah, that's a good question. When I'm back to Japan, I still feel like too much polite.
Uh-huh.
But it does never make me, you know, uncomfortable, right?
Good point.
But I sometimes feel sorry for the workers out there.
Uh-huh.
They are working that too much, work hard without tips.
Right.
So sometimes I leave a tip for them.
Oh, you do?
Thank you for, you know, good customer services.
Do they take it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay,
the
good.
First day, you don't have to really.
Right.
Say, but I said, no problem. Uh-huh. Take it.
Yeah.
But, you know, yeah. Still, I like the customer service in Japan. But yeah. I don't say the customer service in United States better be like that way.
Right.
Because
right.
different country, mm-hmm. different culture.
Right.
So they don't really each time, each copy each time.
Right.
Each country has each way, so I do respect the American way, I do respect the Japanese way as well.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, and I totally agree with you on that point. So you talked about the good things, the bad things. How about some of the things that you struggled in the United States? Mm. What were some of the obstacles you faced your first couple years here?
The of course, English. Because
mm-hmm.
when I took ESL class, there are 7 different levels, right? Starting 1 to 7.
Mm-hmm.
And the first day, we have the test. It was the reading test, writing test, some kind of stuff. Most likely Japanese are good at grammar.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of my, at that time there was not my friend, but a lot of Japanese students starting like level 4 or 5.
Okay.
But me, I was the only one starting level 2.
Number 2.
Yeah. So, at that time, I still remember that days, the English study, the first day, the teacher say to the student in level 2 to do the homework, right?
Mm-hmm.
The teacher asked them to do the homework reading, like the textbook, before you come to the tomorrow, you have to read the page 1 to 15. Read a book at home and come back tomorrow. But at that time, I couldn't understand what he's saying.
Mm.
Everything was in English, right? I didn't even understand what he asking me. So next day, of course, I came to the school without nothing.
Right, right.
Then what's happening was my teacher asked me, why, Tomo, why you didn't read the textbook before you come? I told you to the homework. But still, I don't understand why he's mad at me.
Mm-hmm.
I understand his face. Yeah. He's mad.
But you don't know why.
I don't know why. I'm just feeling like something I did wrong.
Right.
But I didn't know what's wrong with it.
Yeah.
That's my start. But the good stuff is all the students starting the student level 2 was same level.
Mm-hmm.
And their communication is the too much broken English. But, you know, at least they are trying to communicate each other, even the broken English.
Right.
And there's no Japanese out there. Mm. Because all the Japanese are level higher. I am the only one. So only one, the way to communicate with them is English. So
right.
I was struggling to communicate with them. But maybe at that, the situation make me improve my English.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's difficult, right? Because when you're in a situation where you don't even understand the instructions from the teacher,
right.
The teacher tells you to read 15 pages, but you don't even know what the teacher is telling you what to do. So right. You come in the next day and you have no idea why the teacher is mad at you, right? Yeah.
But I was not the only one.
Other students too. Yeah. So maybe the teacher had to read.
Teacher had to struggle. Yeah. Me, I don't care.
Yeah. But it seems like you're in a very good situation with good classmates who were not afraid to just speak up. And that probably helped you become a better speaker, right? On that note, how did you learn to become a good speaker? Was it in the classroom? Was it with friends? Did you watch a lot of movies? What did you do specifically to...
For me personally, friends.
Friends.
Yeah. I was playing soccer, the football here.
Mm.
So it's not hard to make my friends through the sport, doing sports. So that helps a lot to making friends. And international students, each of people speaking broken English. So that days make me realize that I don't really have to do the perfect English. The goal to learning English is communicate it to each other.
Right.
it's not necessary to have the perfect English.
Mm-hmm.
So the Friends movie, some people say that watching the movie, it helps a lot.
Yeah.
But for me, doesn't match it.
Yeah.
Because even me,
uh-huh.
now, I don't go to the movie theater.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I go to the movie theater, probably I understand the English maybe 50% or less.
Right.
But there's no worry about it, because in the real life, you don't have chance to keep listening 2 hours somebody talking.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Keep listening 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
There's no situation like that.
Right.
So, and also, if somebody say the word I don't understand, I can ask them to.
Right.
Can you say again? But the movie is non-stop.
Yeah, you can't stop the right? movie. You can't say it to the yeah. actor. Huh? What yeah. did you say just yeah. now, right? Yeah. Yeah, well, that's a good point, though, because yeah. in a movie setting, you are basically just listening
just
the
listening.
Entire
yeah.
time. Right. right.
And also that's the way to learn English you can do in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
But I was in United States.
Good point.
You don't have to really do the same way to learn mm-hmm. English in Japan people.
Right.
There is American, a lot of American people, a lot of international people here. Uh-huh. So just start talking to them.
Yeah. yeah, like why watch a movie when there are a lot of American people here, right? A real person in
yeah,
front of
person.
Me. Yeah, yeah. But yes, you know, I think you bring up a good point in terms of like watching movies and talking to a real person. Mm-hmm. You know, with movies, you are just sitting there for 2 hours. And if you don't understand mm-hmm. it, the movie yeah. keeps on going, right? But in a real conversation, if you don't understand what they're saying, mm-hmm. you can stop them. Like, right. I'm sorry, I didn't, you know, hear what you mm-hmm. said. I didn't catch what you said. Can you say that one more
right.
time? And then from there, you learn a little
right.
bit. So I think that's a great way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And also the good point to talking to people, when the other people starting understand I'm not the person to the fluent English person.
Right.
So what's happening was they picking up easy word to talk to me.
Mm.
Right. That is not a movie or listening radio doesn't help. So when I conversation with somebody else, I do the face like that to understand it.
Yeah.
Then the people are starting choosing the more the comfortable word they're
right.
picking up and speaking slowly like that.
Uh-huh.
They are not robot.
Right.
They are the real person. So that make me to help me to the study English more fun.
Right,
fun.
Right,
yeah.
exactly. And that is what communication is
yeah,
all about,
yeah.
right? Is you, when you're speaking to one another, you have to make sure that they are understanding what
mm-hmm.
you are saying and
right.
you are understanding what they are saying.
Yeah.
And when you're talking to a real person, if they notice, oh, maybe this person isn't understanding what I'm
mm-hmm.
saying, they're going to adjust the way
right.
they speak. They might slow down.
Yeah.
They might use easier words.
Yeah. Even my worker may be picking up easy words.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe, I think that even my worker talking to American customers,
uh-huh.
and maybe I understand not the perfect.
Yeah.
Because they are using too much slang.
Yeah.
But when I talking to my worker, when I talking to my customer, the face-to-face, one-on-one, they are picking up easy words.
Right.
So nothing that really hard time to understand.
Exactly. Exactly. So it sounds like for you, you really learned English from communicating with people.
Mm.
You made an effort. You made it a point to go out
right.
and meet with people and talk to
mm.
them. Very cool. Let's go to the next here. So now I want to talk a little bit about your food trucking business. So how did you get into your food trucking business?
Mm-hmm.
Because you said that you went to the community college for 2 years. You
mm-hmm.
graduated with a film and photography degree, and then you worked for a company.
Mm-hmm.
So you didn't just go into the food trucking
right.
business right away. How did this whole thing come about?
The company I worked for here was the Japanese company and the publishment company. Then I've been having very, very great time out there. I don't zero complain about the back there. But when I start my own business. Probably I want to do the service not only Japanese, but any other nationality customers. That's my the principal goals.
Mm-hmm.
Then after that, I was thinking to do what should I do. Then somehow come up the food business, because food is the one you don't really speak perfect English.
Mm-hmm.
Because if food is good, maybe good enough customer service, then customer make happy and keep the customer coming back. Mm-hmm. That's my maybe that's the way I thought.
Right.
Maybe if I go to Google or Facebook, I have nothing to do. But food, especially focus on the Japanese food.
Yeah.
That's the way other country people cannot do it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I can use the advantage I am the Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the reason to choose the food business. Then what the next question is, why did I choose the food truck business?
Exactly, right? So you have the food, so I understand why you got into the food business.
True, yes.
So instead of opening up your own restaurant, you decided to buy a truck and get into the food trucking business. So why did you go down that path?
Probably financial reason, maybe, for sure. But the word I always in my mind is the one, the words, the, you know, the Ray Kroc. Ray Kroc is a person that the McDonald's franchising and spread to the all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
His name is Ray Kroc. And he say the be daring, be first, be different.
Uh-huh.
So don't be afraid to be the first person doing the challenge, whatever. People don't do it.
Uh-huh.
Right. And that make me inspiring that if I open the Japanese restaurants,
right,
a lot, tons of the Japanese restaurants all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, especially LA.
Right, a lot of Japanese restaurants.
Especially
in
around
LA.
Here, South Bay.
Yeah, so many, right? Yeah.
And what's the reason I starting the Japanese restaurant after that? There's a lot of good restaurants already, and there are a lot of good chefs have a career in Japan. If I start following them, there's no reason to win.
Mm-hmm.
But think of the food truck. How many trucks in a Japanese food truck in the LA? Probably at that time I was like 3,000 food truck.
Right.
And Japanese food truck at that time maybe one or two.
That's it?
Yeah.
Wow.
Even now, for now, I'd say like 5 food trucks.
That is it? Really?
Owned by Japanese.
Uh-huh.
A lot of the Japanese, they say Japanese trucks, Japanese food, but owned by another country people, right?
Right, right.
I don't say something bad about it, but Japanese-owned Japanese food truck is, I would say, like a 5.
Yeah. So, like, the authentic Japanese food trucks are only about 5 out of... More than 3,000 now, though, right? I'm assuming.
Expanding, yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely expanding. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So maybe the chance to survive.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Right? There's less competitors.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah.
And focus on what you can do, what I can do as a Japanese. Because that's why I pick up the curry, Japanese. I would say for the American people, curry is an Indian curry, though.
Yeah. <You know?
laughs> At that time, I thought the curry is a very authentic Japanese food.
Yeah. And actually, I want to stop you there for a quick second because I do have a question about that. So there are a lot of Japanese food you could have chose from, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess like when you ask an American person, what is the first thing that comes to mind when you think of Japanese food? I'm assuming the first thing that most people will say is sushi, right? But of the many Japanese foods that we have in Japan, why did you decide to go with Japanese curry? Yeah.
Okay. The main reason one is I don't have skill to make sushi.
So you're not a sushi chef.
I'm not a sushi chef. Probably I go to do the sushi. Maybe I had to learn the at the back then. Go to the sushi academy or whatever.
Yeah.
How to cut the the fishes.
Mm-hmm.
But one reason is I don't have skill to the making sushi, right? Then also think about the food truck business. That is, it's not easy to keep the rare stuff fresh. Because when I'm driving freeway, couple hours in summertime,
yes,
like 90 degrees, 100 degrees, you have to keep the rare fish fresh.
Mm-hmm.
It's not easy,
mm-hmm.
right? And it means a little bit cost, I mean, risk. But think of the Japanese curry. It's one is easy operation, because operation is steam up the rice and dump the curry on the top, and that's it.
That's it. Yeah.
Easy operation means less workers.
Uh-huh.
Less workers mean less cost.
Right.
And easier to running the business. Uh-huh. Right. And reason two is the less food loss, because Japanese curry, after the daily work, you don't have to throw away the leftover.
Mm.
You can use the curry next day. Mm-hmm. Maybe sometimes even next day it tastes better.
Exactly.
Than,
right? Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. So if curry business is very, I don't say easy, but the good to make a profit.
Yeah. Well, it seems like you thought everything through, that everything was very calculated when you decided to go with curry.
Right.
Because now when you explain this to me, it makes sense, right?
Right.
It seems like curry is the right dish for a food trucking business.
And food cost is pretty good.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
When you do the sushi truck, maybe food cost is a lot.
Yeah. And on top of that, like you mentioned, Japanese curry is very different from, let's say, Indian curry, right?
Right.
When you live here in the United States, or at least here like in Los Angeles, I guess now in Los Angeles, we have a lot of different types of food, so you get exposed to a lot of different types of curries. But when you think of curry here in the United States, I think most people think of Indian curry,
yeah, Indian
right?
Curry.
And many people, if you've never been to Japan or never been to a Japanese restaurant, you don't really know what Japanese curry is, right? But when you grow up in Japan, Japanese curry is something you eat growing up as a kid, right? It's like something that it feels very home to you, right?
Food.
The mama food, right? Exactly. And all kids love curry.
Yes.
I love to eat curry. That there's something about Japanese curry that I think is closely related to Japanese people. And I think it's very awesome that you're able to bring that to the food trucking business and show, you know, American people that this is Japanese curry.
Yeah. And surprising, I have only a lot of the Indian custom too.
Really?
Repeated customers.
Uh-huh.
Even I go to the event, the big event, a lot of the food trucks come together. And my truck, Japanese curry, and right next to me, the Indian curry. And sometimes the Indian custom come to me.
What do they say about Japanese curry, your curry?
Surprisingly, they say not really different.
Oh, it's not really different?
Yes.
Oh, interesting.
The way maybe mix the spicy, the way Japanese curry and the Indian curry is maybe the difference. But most likely the Indian curry loves both.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
So maybe for them it's more choices.
more variety, huh, in their curries. Wow. So very cool, man. Customer service. Okay. So we talked about customer service that you have experienced in Japan growing up and the customer service that you have become accustomed to here in the United States in the last 20 years. So when people come to your food truck, what kind of customer service does your food truck offer? Does your business offer? Is it the Japanese style? Is it the American style? Is it a little bit of both?
Yeah, oh, that's pretty much a good question, Dad. Because no matter what the type of business, the business means my policy business is entertainment. How much make a customer happy or how much customer entertain? So the way, I won't say the way I do is Japanese style or American style, I don't know that. But I'm focused on is each customers come to my visit my truck, make happy.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the way I do is making the stamp card.
Mm-hmm.
And each time customer bring the card, I marked the stamp card and collecting 10 mark, I give you the one free tacos.
Right.
And same time, I write it down in the card. I write it down the American customer's name in Japanese.
Uh-huh.
For example, I ask a customer, what's your name? And he say, Jun.
Uh-huh.
Okay, write it down in Jun in hiragana.
Uh-huh.
And showing them to the, hey, let's take a look. This is your name in Japanese.
Uh-huh.
That's the one the American
really
customer
cool.
never seen. Their name in another country, right?
Yeah.
They're holding the stamp card in their wallet.
Uh-huh.
And that makes remind my truck name in the wallet, right?
Yeah.
And helps to repeat, make the customer come repeat it.
Yeah.
Mm. And also the free tacos.
Uh-huh.
One, the fill out the one stamp card, making one taco free. And our next one, second fill out, two taco free,
yeah,
is more and more.
Yeah.
And before like 26 stamp cards, customer came to uh-huh. here and they ordered 26 free tacos. Almost I was bankrupt.
You saved up the stamp cards.
Yeah.
Huh?
When I started the stamp card business, I never expected that
somebody bring 26 of them. But in one day, you're like, your food truck is done because you're all free. So for people that might be a little bit confused, they're like, hold on, I thought Seo-san does curry.
Mm.
Why is he giving out tacos?
Oh, okay. Yeah. When I start in business, only I do the curry on rice,
uh-huh.
curry rice.
Right.
But keep doing my business, I found out not everyone eat rice.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Some people eat another stuff. So since this is Southern California, more Hispanic people or they are familiar with the Mexican food.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm mixing up like a curry burrito, curry quesadilla. Quesadilla is one of the customer favorites for now.
Oh man, I had it and it was so good. It was delicious.
Yeah, so mixing up Japascan, people say that.
Uh-huh. Japascan.
Japascan, Japanese, Mexican.
Uh-huh.
Mixing up Japascan foods, sometimes people call me. So I'm keep adjusting what customer like it.
Right.
Yeah. So maybe the June came to the truck.
Uh-huh.
Might be surprising that it's not like a traditional Japanese style.
Yeah. And that's what makes your food truck really cool is that it's a fusion between the traditional Japanese curry with what American people like, right? And you are catering towards the people here. Obviously, I went to your food truck. I had the quesadilla with the curry in it. First time ever in my life to have a quesadilla with curry inside of it.
Crazy.
But I'm not going to lie. It was crazy. I was like, hold on. Is this any good? But it was delicious, you know?
Thank you.
And being able to be creative. And kind of going back to what you were saying, right? Be daring, be the first. Mm-hmm. And what was the last one?
Be daring, be first, be different.
Be different, right? Yeah. So it seems like with your food trucking business, you follow this philosophy mm-hmm. because you are very daring putting curry in a quesadilla. And you might be the first person to put curry in a quesadilla. But because you are the first person to do it, I think it naturally attracts a lot of interest from other people. And now it's a big success, right? People love it.
Still on the way.
Trying to get there, right?
It's surprising that they are the choice as option.
Uh-huh.
Once customer order the curry, we can give the option to the customer that as a topping.
Uh-huh.
You can choose the cheese topping or garlic, guacamole, rice cracker, furikake, whatever they want.
Uh-huh.
Make me surprised is a lot of people order furikake on top of the curry.
Oh,
that's
wow.
Japanese, never imagine, right?
Never.
That's make me interesting too.
Yeah.
Oh, that way, this is the way to American people like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I do the business in Japan,
uh-huh.
never have the customer that furikake on the top.
Yep.
That's very fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, make me excited to be keep doing the business here.
Exactly.
Yeah, see the difference.
Mm-hmm. Because what you thought as normal, once you come over here, is not normal anymore,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Furikake on curry, of course, is really good for Americans. But for Japanese people, that's like, ooh, that's disgusting, right?
Yeah. If people like it, people like it. That's good. Go ahead.
Go ahead, right? Yeah. And I also think you mentioned, you know, you write their name in Japanese on the card. I think that is really cool.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Because American people, I don't know what it is, but they love Chinese kanjis or like not just Chinese characteristic, but, you know, Japanese hiragana or kanji in general. They love it, right? And when you write it down for them, it becomes very personal. Mm-hmm. That card is not just a card anymore, but a card that a Japanese person wrote for them in Japanese. Mm-hmm. Super cool, I think.
Thank you.
Yeah.
The first I was writing the Chinese character in the name it, but it takes a long time. And I have to transfer Jun's name to
You have to think of the kanji.
Of it, right?
Yeah.
And the people making line, a lot of people waiting and making line, thinking of to Jun translated to the Chinese character. It's too much hard time. So I change to the hiragana.
Yeah, that's a good idea, though. Because then you have to explain what the kanji means and like what everything means to each customer takes too long. Right. So, yeah. Hopefully, none of your customers took that and put like a tattoo on their arm. It happens a lot, right? you know, aside, you know, from work, what's something that you try to continue to do every day? Is there anything that you just kind of do on a daily basis, whether it's like working out or whether it's, I don't know, reading, or is there things that you do outside of work that like a habit that you try to keep up?
The going to gym is the one I have to do more often, so I couldn't say that daily work. Especially I came back from Japan, I got fat. I have to keep more often to go to the gym. Daily work, maybe probably that one. Making diary.
Okay, you write in your journal.
Yeah, before go to the bed. So maybe I'm going to write it down. The podcast, today's podcast stuff, into my diary tonight.
And when you write in your diary, if you don't mind sharing, like what do you write about? Do you just reflect on the
very
day?
Very much the general stuff, what's happening in my business. Today I met somebody. But the good stuff to keep making diary is the my diary is the one, how do you explain it? The same day, in the one page, you can take a look, like last year of today, what I did.
Oh, really?
2 years ago.
Today.
Today, what did I write? That's a list. But easily you can tell that 3 years ago, today is January.
Today is January 19th.
19. Mm-hmm. 3 years ago, January 19th. 5 years ago, January 19th. What I was thinking, that I can take a look very easy. So that's what make me, motivated to write it down. Like 5 years ago, I was a sales was only one ticket. And today's sales was $2. But think of it. 5 years ago, I was only one ticket.
Right.
So comparing 5 years ago,
you see yourself growing, right? Yeah.
Don't be nervous, and don't be no reason to be negative. I'm growing up. So keep motivating up.
I like that. I like that a lot. You know. Yeah. Because I think the only way to see how much you are growing every day is to reflect. And in order to reflect, I think writing it down is one of the best ways to do it. Because human memory is unreliable. It's easy to forget.
I don't even remember what last dinner I had.
Yeah, exactly, right? Exactly. So being able to write things down and look back on it, even, you know, 1 week, seeing what you did 1 week ago, seeing what you did 1 year ago, makes a big difference on how you write.
Yes.
Yeah. So I try to make it a habit to write in the diary too. Maybe not as detailed as you do, but every morning I write things down and I always try to look at the diary and see how I did for that day. I do have to make it a habit to also at the end of the night write down how my day went as well. So we're kind of coming down to the end here. I want to talk about your future goals, right? So you just kind of mentioned, you know, 5 years ago, you only sold one ticket and here you are today making progress. Where do you see yourself in 10 years? What are your goals 10 years from now?
since my life is jet coaster, roller coaster,
up and down.
Still don't know though. Because like maybe probably the 10 years ago myself, I never expected 10 years later here now. But I'm pretty much sure 10 years later, still living in LA or United States or maybe. Nobody knows it. I would love to do my own business, to keep in business. That's, I'm not guaranteed that lot this curry food truck business is going on, but probably I'm asking somebody to run into my business, the food truck business. But still, I'm pretty much sure doing my own business
right
in the United States. And meeting the international customers, including the American customers, French customer, Korean customer, Chinese customer, no matter what nationality, making, trying to make them happy.
Yeah.
That's my the principle.
Right.
So, if I doing that kind of stuff, probably I don't really mind to what type of business I do. Yeah.
As long as you're serving the world. Right? Yeah.
Maybe I do that on YouTube.
Exactly. You should document your food trucking days. Yeah. Your business. So do you have any final messages, advices to the podcast listeners?
This is the listener is Japanese in Japan.
Most of them, yes.
Okay. So the reason why I got offer from June to do being the podcast is trying to tell them that even me, like the I don't have a good background, but still I could, at least I could live in the United States for 20 years, right?
Yeah.
Doing their own business. So there's there is no reason that you cannot do it. Yeah, don't be afraid, and don't be too nervous. And doing the putting the first step, whatever you like. Yeah, just dreaming whatever you like. Yeah, focus on what you want. That's my message.
Well, thank you very much, right? And if it's something that you really want to do, then if you put your mind to it, it can become reality, right?
Yeah,
and it seems like talking to you, that's what it's all about, is once you set your mind on something, you've always been able to achieve it.
Yeah, totally.
And if you can do it, then why can...
Why
not anybody could do it, right? Yeah.
When I was studying English, I didn't even understand the homework.
And that's where you started, and this is where you are today.
Yeah.
So, yes. You know, Seo-san, I just realized we've been talking for 1 hour and we have not mentioned the name of your food truck once yet. So can you tell the podcast listeners the name of your food truck at least so they know?
It's called Luck Dish.
Okay, Luck Dish.
Yes.
And what does that mean? Why Luck Dish?
To bring customer good luck to my customers. Yeah, that's my goal to my business.
And if the listeners want to find more information about you or Luck Dish, where can they go?
Check out our Facebook or Twitter.
Okay.
Instagram.
And is it just Luck Dish?
Luck Dish LA.
LA. Okay. Yeah. And that's on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. All three of them is Luck Dish LA.
Accidentally, the Facebook one is my personal name.
Okay. Got you.
But Instagram... Mostly Instagram.
Okay, got you. So if you guys want to find out more about Seo-san's food trucking business called Luck Dish, go to Instagram or Twitter and look up Luck Dish LA. That's LuckDishLA. And you'll find what he's up to, where his food truck is, and... like I mentioned in the beginning, we actually made a YouTube video out of this entire thing. We did a conversation in English today, but if you're interested to see what his food truck looks like, what kind of food he serves, and me eating his quesadilla with curry in it, come to my YouTube channel and check it out, because honestly, it was one of the coolest experiences, and I've never had a curry quesadilla, but... I think from now on, even at home, when I make curry now, I think I'm going
to
start putting curry in my quesadilla. So, Seo-san, well, thank you very much for joining us today. It was a lot of fun.
All right.
And you guys, make sure to swing by the YouTube channel and check out the video that me and Sale-san did together. All right, Sale-san, thank you very much.
Thank you.
If you want to check out Tomo's food truck business, swing by my YouTube channel. I visited his food truck and made a YouTube video out of it. You gotta check it out. His food truck is awesome. Just go to the Hapa Eikaiwa YouTube channel and you'll find it under the LA videos. Tomo-san のフードトラックを見たい方は私の YouTube チャンネルをチェックしてください。実は私は彼のフードトラックへ直接行って YouTube 動画を作りました。彼のフードトラックはすごくかっこいいので、ぜひ動画をチェックしてください。Hapa Eikaiwa の YouTube チャンネルで見られます。You can find today's show notes on hapaeikaiwa.com/podcast273. The show notes include a summary of today's episode. 今日のエピソードの詳細とインタビューの要約は hapaeikaiwa.com/podcast273 に掲載されているので、ぜひご覧ください。If you have any comments or feedbacks,Feel free to leave a message on my blog. ご意見やご感想などありましたら、ハパ英会話のブログまでにぜひ投稿してください。ハパ英会話は、Facebook、Twitter、Insta、YouTube でほぼ毎日会話に役立つ英語のワンポイントレッスンをお届けしています。また毎朝午前6時に無料のメルマガを配信していますので、まだ登録されていない方はぜひご登録ください。Thanks for listening today. You guys have an awesome day and I will catch you again next week.Take it easy. Peace.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince.I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.